Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Pure Nintendo podcast. My name is Gemma, and this week I have two of Pure Nintendo's finest. I have Trev. Welcome back, Trev.
Hoi hoi.
Ahoy hoi. I love that. Thank you, Mr.
Burns. Mr. Burns. I don't know.
Yeah.
Got to work on it.
I do that with my sister. She and I do that to each other. Like, literally in text messages, we'll write ahoy hoi. We just, we got stuck on that ever since the 90s. To have Kirk. Welcome back, Kirk.
Thank you. I have no Simpsons impressions I can do. I apologize.
That's okay. We'll let it slide this one time. But thank you both for joining me.
I feel like we should devote part of the podcast to maybe picking out a voice for Kirk to practice on.
We could.
Yeah. For next week. I don't know.
I used to be able to do Marvin the Martian from Looney Tunes.
And what happened to that?
But I just haven't done it in a while. Let me work on it, and then we'll try it out next week, maybe.
Okay, that's cool. I mean, speaking of voices, this is kind of going to be the theme of today's show, I think, because there was the big news during the week that the voice of Mario is stepping down. So that was a really good introduction / segue into the news of the week. So we did hear that, I think it was, well, I heard by Twitter or X. I refuse to call it X, I'm sorry, but Twitter. that Charles Martinet is no longer going to be the voice of Mario, which was announced by Nintendo, I guess, and by Charles himself. And at first, I suppose, I thought that sounds like a bad thing, as in, well, it does, it means the loss of his voice for Mario, but... You know, when you hear about voice actors, it's always, there's a little bit of controversy sometimes around, you know, like I'm thinking Bayonetta, I guess. Someone wasn't hired for the job and they were disgruntled, whatever. But it sounds like this was a mutual kind of deal. Maybe he's retiring or he wants to move on or something like that. I don't know. What do we think about this? I have thoughts, but who wants to give theirs maybe first? Trev, what do you think about this whole situation? I mean...
Yeah, it was, it's always sad, I think, when there's an actor you enjoy is, you know, retiring or stepping, you know, away from the industry. But I try to look at it just practically. I mean, Charles Martinet's pushing 70. So, you know, that's retirement age. He's earned it. I don't know how taxing, you know, the voices, the older you get, but I look at going back to Simpsons, like look at, you know, Marge Simpson's voice actress. She's only a few years older than Charles Martinet. And you could definitely see, like, hear the decline in later seasons. So maybe the guy just wants to rest his vocal cords. He's earned it. I mean, he's been doing Mario since what, the early mid 90s. So
yeah.
He's earned it after 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a long time. And he does more than just Mario, doesn't he? He actually does.
Yeah. I was looking through his IMDb. He's actually done, you know, like non-voice acting. He's been in traditional TV shows and movies too, more so early in his career. But yeah, one of his first Nintendo... Oh, I'm sorry, Gemma.
Oh, is there a good example that you could pull out for us off the top of your head?
For traditional acting?
Yeah, I didn't know he did that, to be honest. Yeah, I've always just thought of him as a voice actor.
What? He was Deadpool? Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's The Deadpool. It's a movie from 1988 with Clint Eastwood and Liam Neeson, different ones. But yeah, he's done like TV work too. It looks like he's got entries here for, like Matlock and different TV shows, some movies. I'm trying to see if there's anything I know. Things I recognize. 9 months. I think that's Hugh Grant.
Oh, yeah. So he's done quite a few things. And Matlock,
that's a movie I think I've seen.
Yeah. Matlock just reminds me of The Simpsons anyway. So because, you know, Grandpa is always talking about Matlock, or at least he was in the early episodes.
He's got over 200 credits, though, so.
Wow.
And a lot of it obviously is with Nintendo, but even one of his early credits, actually, it wasn't a Mario game, it was Super Punch-Out on the Super Nintendo. That's one of his early vocal credits with Nintendo. So
Cool.
He's gotten around.
Yeah, and even with within the Mario franchise, he's also Luigi and Wario and Waluigi, I'm guessing. He's like a whole bunch of Mario-related characters, right? He's not just Mario.
Yeah, he's done Bowser and...
You do Bowser as well.
Yeah, well, at least early. And oh, wow, yeah. He was a voice in Skies of Arcadia. That was a great game on Dreamcast and GameCube.
Interesting.
So you shouldn't have got me going to the IMDb because this is like the rabbit hole now. I'm just going to be flipping through this the whole episode.
Yeah. That's okay. Give us some little tidbits as you find them. What do you think, Kurt? Do you have any thoughts on this? I mean, what do we know about what he's doing next? Do we know anything? Because I think he's not, and this is what I was alluding to earlier, he's not departing ways with Nintendo. He's taking on some kind of new role, right? Or is stepping down into a less active role of some sort.
Well, they said he was going to be like a Mario or a Nintendo ambassador, right? Which probably just means that at big events he'll show up for autographing sessions and to talk, I'm guessing. You guys know I don't have the strong emotional attachment to the Mario games that a lot of Nintendo fans justifiably do. So my first thought when it happened was I really hope they're not replacing him with AI.
Is that the nickname for Chris Pratt now? We're calling him AI?
Well, then my second thought was I hope they're not replacing him with Chris Pratt. I can't imagine there's any way that would happen. Chris is still kind of in demand, and you know he's got a lot more to do than voice Mario in games, you know, outside of like the big budget movies. But you know, good for Charles, and he did a fantastic job. But I also, and might get in trouble for this, I don't know that voice is that hard to imitate or to emulate, I should say. So whoever they get to do it, I think a lot of people, at least you'll probably recognize a little bit of a difference, but get used to it very quickly.
Kirk, now we're going to have to hear you imitate that. Forget Marvin the Martian.
I didn't say I could. I'm saying the trained voice acting professionals might be able to do it. Not former English majors.
Yeah. It's like when I think it's like Puss in Boots or something, which is Antonio Banderas in the movies, but then they make a TV show on Netflix and it's not Antonio Banderas. It sounds similar, right? Like obviously they're trying to emulate Antonio's version of Puss in Boots, but it's slightly different. And you're like, slightly different. So it does bring me to a question I have for you also about Mario, which is Super Mario Brothers Wonder is coming out in October. And when this news of Charles leaving the voice of Mario came, I thought, well, I mean, A, it would have been nice if he could have left with one more game under his belt, but that's fine. I think it would have been nicer to retire after that game came out. Anyway, I can't see that game listed on his, well, at least on Wikipedia. Maybe Trev can double check IMDb. But the trailer, I double checked. It does have Mario's voice in it. Like he does do his little woohoo and it's a me or whatever. Or something like that. He does little Mario noises. And when I first saw the trailer, when it dropped, I didn't think it wasn't Charles. And so then when I rewatched it, I'm like you just said, Kirk, it sounds like him. So I feel like the new voice actor is just going to emulate that, maybe. I don't know.
Or maybe the recycling things he already recorded.
Maybe. Yeah, that maybe. Was my thought. They might be using like archival footage, not footage, archival, you know, recordings or... because I was kind of dissecting the trailer because there's no we don't actually know, or at least I don't know as of the date of this recording who's doing the voices. There's no listing that I'm aware of, so we'll either be surprised or it'll be, you know, like Kirk said just previously, used material. I imagine they must have a wealth of material or outtakes that over the decades that they've probably, you know, keeping on file. So
yeah,
did they address that? Didn't they say something like he wasn't used for the new game?
I thought they did.
Yeah, but we don't know who is being used. So
no, they said it'll be in the game's credits to kind of wait and see kind of thing, right? Yeah. I think that's what they said. Yeah,
because like we know about some of the others, like Bowser and Peach, but we don't know Mario or Luigi or I guess you gotta beat the game when it comes out.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the big bonus, finding out who worked on it.
Yeah, or just waiting for somebody else to do it and then finding it on YouTube.
And then we'll find out it really was Kirk. No wonder he said it was easy.
That's right. Wouldn't that be a great story for Pure Nintendo?
Yeah.
Is that where you were last weekend, Kirk?
That's right.
Were you recording?
Yeah, there was no Konami event. I made the whole thing up.
You covered it very well. Yeah.
I'm very thorough, you know, if nothing.
I was suspicious. I mean, whoever heard of, what was it, Super Crazy
Rhythm Castle, yeah. Yeah, I had to come up with that quickly. Not my best work.
You're just looking around for inspiration. And, of course, it starts with super, right? It's super, I've got rhythm, and there's a castle in the background. It's, yeah. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, so I'm slightly disappointed only because I think it would have been nice for, like I said, for him to have one big game, especially Mario Wonder being such a different style, I suppose, to previous iterations. But maybe it's also, you could look at it as a good opportunity to give Mario a fresh voice because it is a different version of Mario, I suppose, in a new platforming style. Just from the trailer, anyway. Hopefully we find out more about that game soon. We're counting on a direct in September, is that right? We're hoping there'll be a Nintendo Direct sometime in the next month.
I'm always hoping for a Direct.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the time.
Yes. We'll take them when they come.
Even though I would have preferred, like you, Gemma, for him to have a game to go out on. I mean, going out as the voice of Mario in the Mario movie, you know, which made over $1 billion, I think that's a strong way to go out.
Yeah. So you're saying he should have been Mario in the Mario movie?
No. I'm saying that for his final credit as Mario, if it's indeed his final credit, that's a strong thing to go out on with $1 billion, you know, box office hit.
Yeah, true.
But he wasn't Mario, but he was Mario's dad, kind of maybe passing the torch to the, you know.
Was he Mario's dad? I didn't even know that.
He was, yeah.
Yep. Oh, that's cool. I knew he was like that little arcade guy.
The arcade dude there.
Yeah, I did. Yes.
Yeah, I think he did both.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I like that. That does.
Now you got to rewatch the movie.
I do
with your kids.
Oh, we have 4K now. Come on over and watch. See it in all its glorious color. Yeah, but we haven't watched it yet. Max, my youngest, got it for his birthday, and we haven't popped it in. Maybe tonight.
Yeah,
I'd be curious what you think of it compared to the 3D.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the 4D, whatever. What did you say? 4D? What did you call it?
4K.
4K, sorry. Yeah. I'm sure it looks brilliant. Yeah. You'd have to have a decent TV, I guess, to go with that right?
Yep, we do. I have to. I play a lot of video games on it. I need those colors and those pure blacks.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, I think the reception's been fairly well received, right? Just because he's staying on as ambassador, you know. So there's obviously room for him. It does sound, you know, like it was a mutual decision. Like you said, he's probably retiring. He's 67 years old. He's done it for a long time. He's going to be still making appearances, hopefully, and seeing fans and stuff like that. And we'll welcome in a new voice, and hopefully, they are greeted, you know, appropriately and given. And fans give him the respect, I suppose, that he will deserve. So I just, you know, there's no need to lash out at a new voice actor just because Charles is stepping down. So hopefully there's nothing like that happening.
I kind of admire whoever they're going to get. It takes, you know, courage to step into a role that's so well established with a single, you know, person. So, you know, it is easy to be critical, but I always... Any iconic role, I always kind of admire the bravery, you know, an actor takes by taking on that challenge. So,
Yeah, that's a good point.
Wouldn't it be funny if he comes in with a completely different voice?
Yeah.
Like he's doing a gruff, cigarette-smoking mobster kind of character.
Well, you got to remember, I mean, in the 80s, who was Mario? It was like Lou Albano. Swing your arms from side to side. Do the Mario.
That's true.
That's my demo reel for my audition right there.
Yes, you've got the job. Yeah, I mean, we saw Chris Pratt's, the reaction to Chris Pratt was not positive, one could say. But that, I suppose that was different because Charles was still available. A lot of people thought it should have been him. Chris has obviously got some controversy around him anyway, and didn't sound anything like Mario. He just sounded, you know, in the first trailer, it was like, that just sounds like Chris Pratt. So I think there was
Mushroom a few reasons. Here we come.
Well, yes. I still think that was done because he, I mean, there was so much dialogue. Mario had an awful lot to say, and listening to Charles's, you know, exaggerated, joyful outbursts are great in little chunks, but and again, am I going to get in trouble for this? Do we want Mario to sound like that for an hour and 45 minutes?
It would have destroyed his vocal cords. I can't imagine.
Yeah. It ended up working well. I think Chris was fine in the end.
Overshadowed by Jack Black.
It's fine.
Yeah, he was fine.
Didn't hate it. And if he comes back for a sequel, I will be fine with that too. So, yeah, it's all good. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, sorry. Kirk, did you have something?
No, that was it. I've made enough points about Mario.
Okay. Yes. Well, thank you for that. I did want to say, listeners, we just segued so well into that. I didn't say this up front, but thank you to our listeners for joining us each and every week. We really appreciate it. And if you are on YouTube, please remember to subscribe so you get this podcast delivered every week on Monday. But let's move on to some games that we're playing. And the segue from here might be a platformer that I'm currently playing, since Mario is a platformer. I think everyone knows, listeners, and that I love platformers. So I saw this game come up for review during the week, and it's called Mr. Run and Jump. And so I just wanted to quickly touch on that, and I just realized we're going to talk about Konami, but we'll come back to that, Kirk. We'll come back to that. So Mr. Run and Jump is a platformer that I wanted to ask you guys, because at first I thought this was a classic Atari game that they had re-released in a new format, but I don't think it actually is. From what I can read online, it's actually a new Atari game, as in it is an Atari 2600 game, but it's not originally released in the 80s or whatever, 90s. It's a fan-made thing that you can buy physically for the 2600. Has anyone heard of this?
The console you're talking about, the new 2600 Plus?
Is that what it is? Because I don't know much about Atari, so I don't know the deal. Is the Atari 2600 not the old Atari?
Yeah, I think I saw a bit of it because I was angry that that's not what Intellivision did with their Amico that they were trying to push and has now faded into the ether. Yeah, it looks like it's a physical unit of an Atari 2600. It comes with like old style controllers, but it uses actual physical cartridges. But the big benefit there, you can buy, from what I saw, there were cartridges that'll hold like 10 games. Like you can buy these new cartridges with 10 games on it, but it also will play your old Atari 2600 cartridges if you have them. And I think that's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that is really cool. I agree. And so I thought this was like an old game like those, but no, it's a new game that you can also play on that system. So at the very beginning, when you play the Nintendo Switch version, it plays like the old, like an Atari game. Like it's all not black and white, but very simple pixelated graphics, right? And you kind of run and jump. So it's a platformer, obviously, run and jump.
It's developed, Gemma, Atari, obviously handling the publishing or whatever, but it's developed by the guys at Graphite Lab, which did you review that? Was it Combinera? It was kind of that colorful little puzzler.
Doesn't ring a bell.
We've worked with them before. They also did Hive Jump, which I think we had a developer diary from them in an old issue of PNM.
It does sound
familiar. I gotta look it up now.
It sounds very familiar. I did that Cabinet of Mars.
It was Ted. Ted reviewed that game, and he gave it an 8.5. Mm-hmm. And it's a similar thing. Atari published, Graphite Labs developed. So, yeah, I would encourage anyone to check them out. I think they're out of Missouri. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, Hive Jump was pretty good. I haven't played their last one on Switch, but Hive Jump was pretty good.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I was impressed with this one. It does play really well. It's one of those platformers that, you know, there's platformers that are accessible to everyone, and then there's platformers that are really challenging. This falls into the challenging category. Mm. And yeah, it's not going to be for everybody. It's very hard. So it plays really well, though. It's very colorful. It looks really nice. You can do pretty cool things, like you can wall jump, you know, like Mario. You can jump off walls. You can do a high jump. You can do a long jump. So there's a few different move sets available. The controls are a little odd. Like you have to press the L, is it LR? I think no, sorry, the L button. Yeah, the L shoulder button to duck, and then from there you can jump. You can do your high jump or your long jump. Whereas I don't know why you can't just push down on the D-pad to duck. That seems more intuitive to me. Like I keep pressing D down.
There's no options to remap the controllers?
Don't know. I'll check. I've only just played a little. I started this one yesterday. But yeah, I will check.
That's one of my pet peeves with games, if they don't let you remap, you know, some controls. Not every game needs it.
Yeah.
I always like the option.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's definitely sound options and things like that. I'll check the control options too. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up now because, yeah, we're talking about Mario, and this is a platformer, and I do love platformers. So when I see a platformer, it's almost like, yes, I want to give this a go. And I try not to be too critical and compare them to Mario too much, but in the end, it's, you know, when you play a whole range, and Kirk probably feels this way maybe with JRPGs because you play a lot of them, it's hard to compare them because some are very different to others. But you still think about, oh, this game did this one better, this one did this one better. Do you know what I mean? When it comes to a particular genre?
Oh, sure. Would definitely.
You? Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that was just a little segue there. But let's go back to last week. We talked quite extensively about a trip that Kirk took to New York, which was very exciting. And it's a pity you weren't with us, Trev, because we had some things to ask you and to tell you about.
And no, Kirk is... I gotta stop doing every other week. I gotta do two in a row.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So, but we can give you a bit of a recap. Hopefully you did listen to the show anyway. But Kirk has now published on our website some really good wrap-ups of the games that were played at the Konami event in New York. And did you want to give us a bit of an update, Kirk, what that's about and any extra info you'd like to share with us?
Oh, sure. Sure. Well, the three games that I played were Super Bomberman R2, bits of the Metal Gear Solid Master Collection, Volume 1. And then, as I mentioned last week, my favorite of all the games I played, Super Crazy Rhythm Castle. I we could probably focus more on Metal Gear Solid at this point, because I was reading some other coverage of people who were there, and they had some different opinions that I did, expressing some disappointment about, well, this game didn't get remastered, or this one's this version, and this one's too bare bones. And I thought, with all the content that's in here, and again, as a guy who's never really played a Metal Gear Solid game before, I thought it was fantastic, and there's a whole lot in there. So it just struck me as amusing that... I was seeing such different opinions of my own after attending that event and playing it for a bit. But again, there are, what do we say, like 7-8 games included in that. Metal Gear NES, Famicom version, Snake's Revenge, Metal Gear 2, Metal Gear Solid, Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of Liberty, HD Collection version, and Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater HD Collection version. It's a lot. And, you know,
it is.
Some of them are very similar, but, you know, if you're into this game and you enjoyed these in the past, there's a lot of nostalgia there. And I think if you're new to it, like I was, then there's an awful lot to dig into and find out why these games and Snake himself have been so enduring for gamers.
Mm-hmm. Like Trev. Trev has some experience with the series, right?
I do. I fell away from it probably just after Metal Gear Solid 3, but you know, fortunately for Volume 1 here, I've played all these, or I've had all these games except for the you know, the Famicom version of Metal Gear. And to Kirk's point, I think whenever you're dealing with ports, you know, that aren't just full out, you know, remakes that are just like remastered or, you know, whatever, it's hard to keep your expectations maybe in check, because you either, you know, you want, it's easy to nitpick, right? You see like, oh, these are just upscaled graphics, they're dated, or, you know, but by the same token, you know, looking over these games, you know, if you're a Switch player, are these easily accessible to you? I think a lot of the, I don't want to say casual players, because I don't really like that terminology, but those who aren't in the industry, if you're just a gamer looking to play Metal Gear in handheld mode, I think they're going to be happy to have these games all accessible. And, you know, particularly, I mean, there's some cool ones in here, like the Famicom version I haven't played. VR Missions, I don't know how many played that. I don't think that was a super popular game compared to the original. And, you know, all these games, at least the first two Metal Gear games, when they came out, they were like Game of the Year contenders. I remember Metal Gear going up against Ocarina of Time back in 98. And it was, wow, it was closer than you might remember. So,
yeah.
And of course, I'll be interested in playing, you know, the NES games, because, you know, even though I have Metal Gear on cartridge, it's just so much easier to play it and, you know, make a save state or rewind or whatever type of features they end up including. So, yeah, I'm kind of excited. The more I've been reading about, you know, I read some of the negative ones too, like Kirk, but I think Kirk's write-up is the one I recommend.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you.
So go check it out right now on our website. Yeah, really good points. Thank you, Trev. Excuse me. I'm not a huge Metal Gear, not that I'm not a fan. I just haven't been exposed to it a lot, like I said last week. I think I played one. I don't even know which one it was. Was it one on the DS or the 3DS or something, maybe?
Snake Eater 3D, yeah. I think, right?
Yeah, I don't know how I would have got that one. But I remember playing it at one of those devices. You know, I said this a lot as well, but I love a collection that actually feels like a proper collection. This is a proper collection. Like, it's got, like you said, Kirk, it's got 7 or 8 games. It's a bunch of content for fans. It feels like it's been well put together, well thought out, and of good value, I guess, as well, you could say, because it is a robust collection.
It has items like the visual graphic novels. It's got kind of like guides, maps and stuff to help you through it. It has the soundtrack for one of them. One of the games has a full soundtrack included. So yeah, there's an awful lot there.
Trev loves the soundtrack. That might be up your alley, Trev.
I do. And the graphic novel, for that matter. I used to own, back when I had a working PlayStation Portable, they had a Metal Gear, graphic novel. I think it was just one of them. But that was pretty cool too, because it wasn't just like you're flipping pages. You could kind of like pan and scan and like zoom in, if I remember right. It was a little more interactive. So
yeah, that's cool.
One thing I really like about these games too, I just want, because these are, you know, these are mature games, and I typically don't gravitate toward, in fact, I definitely don't gravitate towards M-rated games. But one of the things I always liked about the Metal Gear games is there's a lot of ways you can play. In fact, if you go out guns blazing, you're probably going to get a game over sooner than later. But these are the type of games that really reward almost being passive, because, you know, you want to focus on stealth and sneaking around and hiding in the shadows. So I really appreciate that. I used to challenge myself, okay, with the exception of like the boss characters here, can I get through like these missions without any casualties? So I think that's a good option maybe for people who might be turned off by these games.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. Definitely. I'm like you. I don't really love those kind of more violent games. So to make this one less about, yeah, the kills, I guess, and more about the stealth is a nice departure, I suppose, from some other titles that might not appeal to people. Anyway, will you be picking it up, do you think, Trev? Is it something you're interested in?
I don't think I'm going to at launch, but I think I probably will. I'm definitely curious to check out the Famicom version in particular, because I've never played that. That's the only one I haven't played. And Snake's Revenge, for that matter, I don't have that. I used to own that as a kid, so I'd be curious how the nostalgia holds up, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, some of those NES games age really well, and then some are like, wow, what was I thinking? So
yeah.
Either way, I think it'll be fun to revisit.
And what do you think?
I want to circle back real quickly to something you said about the game. You mentioned, Trevor, that it's more mature. I thought where you were going with that was the warning that I've seen across the internet and saw when I was playing at the beginning. There's a little text message saying that some of the content in this game may now be, as they put it, quote, may be considered outdated, unquote. But they left it in. And I thought that was kind of appropriate for this, I should say. First of all, there's no maybe about it, as I pointed out in my article. The way these characters are portrayed and the way they act at certain times is outdated. I mean, not for the characters. The characters are who they are, but I don't think they would be portrayed that way if they were this way. And again, I didn't play a lot, so I don't know exactly what they were talking about. But early on in the game, Snake is doing a lot of flirting with the female characters in the game and hitting on them remotely, and they're just totally into it. They think it's great. Yeah, maybe we'll go out after you get back from your mission, kind of thing. It's not terribly offensive, but outdated. But I think that considering the type of player mostly is going to play a Metal Gear Solid game, would probably be more offended if they cut that. Because gamers do not like any content being removed from games. I won't say censored, because it's not censorship. It's just editing for content. That's a completely different thing. But Metal Gear Solid fans who like Snake and all his bravado and machismo will be happy to know that he's still there fully and very well acted. In the later games that have voice acting, I was really impressed with all the characters, no matter how minor, with how good the voice acting was. And I think that helps too.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good point. You're looking at I guess the public consensus from 20, 30 years ago is different from how it is nowadays. And yeah, do you change the game to change the times, or, you know, do you leave it as is? And yeah, there's a lot of things. I mean, even interactions with some of the enemies, like I talked about how I prefer stealth or knocking out. But like, you can point a gun at somebody's head and watch them soil themselves and then, you know, kill them. So that's one way to play. I mean, that's certainly not how I play. It's not my preference. But, you know, when people see choices like that, you know, are they going to take offense? Like, oh, that's torture, you know, and not saying that's wrong to feel that way. But yeah, what do you do? At what point does, you know, a remaster turn into something entirely new, like Metal Gear 1.5 or something? It's a balancing act.
Well, what's the latest Metal Gear Solid title? Like, what year did the latest one come out? And is it quite different to those of the 80s and 90s? Or is it still...
No idea. The last one I played was Metal Gear Solid 3 and that was back in 2004 on the PS2.
Oh, yeah.
So I haven't played it in 20 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's why volume one is for me and volume two, maybe not so much.
Yeah. Well, I do wonder what volume two will encompass. Like, what will be captured in the second volume, when that might even be a thing. It might be a long way off. I don't know. They didn't hint at anything, Kirk, at the event, I guess. They're pretty much trying to promote volume one at this point, I suppose.
Yeah, they didn't talk about an X package. And I'm not even sure if looking at I did a quick search here to see what the latest one is, and the one that I can find is Metal Gear Solid 5, which came out in 2015. And I'm willing to bet that if they were to do another package that has, you know, those games, Metal Gear Solid 4 or 5 and whatever else may come after, would they even be compatible with the Switch?
Ooh, fair point. Fair point.
Yeah, good question. Not sure. I assume it'll be a while away. Yeah. And maybe it depends on sales. It'd be weird to have Volume 1 and then not follow up with something else. But hey, if it doesn't do well, they're not going to waste time on it. But maybe they're already working on it. I don't know. Who knows?
But do we know what's actually on the cart versus like what will be a download? Did they address that?
I believe all of it's on the cart for Volume 1. At least it seemed to be. And, you know, it's possible they already downloaded it onto the system and I just didn't know. But, you know, when I was loading up the game, everything was right there and accessible from the start.
Good, good, good.
Yeah, well, thank you, Kirk. And if readers, or sorry, listeners want to check out more detail about that event and that game, please head over to purenintendo.com. Did you want to talk about any of the other games you played on the day, Kirk? Do you want to update us on anything else or happy with
it? Well, I can say that we do have one more article coming for Super Crazy Rhythm Castle. I interviewed the brand manager, a fellow named Christian, about that game, and that article has not been posted yet. It's coming very soon at Pure Nintendo, so if you have read my write-up of the wonderful Super Crazy Rhythm Castle, come back soon, and we'll have a little more content on that.
Brilliant.
Which, sadly, there still is no release date for that game, so I don't know how long we'll be waiting for it, but really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it does sound good. And yeah, I think it's just like a 2023 kind of window, right? Like we expect to see it this year? Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
That's cool. Did you ask him that question, Christian? Did he not give you any more details?
I did not ask him that. We talked about characters, his favorite character, the music. Like last week when we talked about the debate between licensed music and original music for a rhythm game. So we talked about that, the colors, just mainly focused on the gameplay and strategies. I got some good tips.
Yeah, nice.
Sounds like it wasn't as difficult as a Space Channel 5 there, Kirk.
Well, I could reiterate that. It wasn't as difficult for me. When you start the game, there's a regular level, then there's pro. And if you start at regular and the game feels that you're doing too well, it will bump you up. And after the first level, I completed it at 99% accuracy. So it bumped me from regular to pro. And all that does, from what I could see, is it adds a fourth button. So instead of hitting R, L, and Y, I'm now hitting R, L, Y, and the left D pad button. And just adding that fourth button in there was enough to knock me back down to like 77%, I believe, on the second level. So it will take some practice, but you can go into the levels. There's what they call a music lab, and you can go in and just play strictly the rhythm battles without having to worry about all the side content the game tosses at you.
Yeah, it sounds really fun. So if you get knocked up to or bumped up to pro, you can't change it. You can't manually go back.
Yes. You can switch back and forth at any time.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, speaking of rhythm titles, we also mentioned last week Samba de Amigo, and I just wanted to give a quick update on that because I told you I would try the demo, Kirk, and I did, right? So promise fulfilled.
Okay, great.
I have just a couple of minor points to say about this. And the full game, I think, is coming out. It'll be out when this podcast launches or the day after. I think it's coming out on the 29th. Yeah. So very, very briefly, I went to get the demo on the Australian eShop, which is like my default because I'm in Australia. It didn't have a demo. It may now, but it didn't last week. So I'm like, well, that's weird. So I had to go to the US eShop to get the demo. So I don't know if it's only a US thing, but it wasn't available.
I do know the US version came out first and then they slowly rolled it out for other countries. Right. So I'm not sure all of them have it yet.
Yes. So maybe it's there now, but it definitely wasn't there a week ago. The demo, for whatever reason that I had, only had two songs, which I think we talked, maybe there'd be a few more, but there are only two songs. Yep. So it wasn't a lot, which is fine. It's a demo. But there's not a lot of replayability in the demo. So it's very, very much just a teaser of the full game. And I played both songs. I tried the two methods of play, which are controller or like motion, right? So I was feeling lazy. So the first song I did, I used the controller as like, you know, the actual like buttons. It was not as good. It was really hard actually. So I did really poorly. And then I thought to myself, I'm going to try the actual motions. I'm not going to be lazy. I'm going to stand up and actually do this properly. Like it's meant to be played as if I'm holding maracas. And it was way easier. And I did way better and actually way more fun. So I did enjoy it. I don't know if I'd get the full game, but it was really fun. It was fun. I will say that. I had a good time with my two songs that I had. So Summer de Amigo, worth checking out, I'd say. If you're into motion games, I think. Trev, are you a motion person? Do you like your motion games?
I do, yeah. I think I like them more than...
You might dig it.
...than many.
Yeah.
Specifically with Samba de Amigo, though, I played it. There was a version on the Wii. Mm. And for whatever reason, they with the Wiimote and Nunchuck, it was different from how the Dreamcast one was, and I had a hard time wrapping my head around it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But... You know, it's just, I'm sure the Switch version is going to be, you know, a lot more polished.
It was really, very limited time with it, but it was pretty good. The controllers were really hard because you use your left hand for the, let's say, the D-pad, I think, and you have up, left, and down, and then your other hand is doing, I think, what is it, Y, A, and B or something, right? So the directions, because it's up. The maracas go up in the air or they go to the side or they go down. And it just, I mean, probably with practice it gets easier, but to coordinate my left and right hands going kind of up left and down right at the same time is really hard with the controller to respond to what's happening on the screen. So I don't know. For me, the motion was easier, but I'm glad they give you the option. I think that's really neat. Yeah.
I think the demo is available in, besides Australia, I think it's in a, looks like it's in Europe and North America.
Cool. Yeah, it may just not have been out at the time. Like, it was a week ago that I did this, so maybe it just hadn't hit Australian eShop yet. But anyway, hopefully it's there now.
Can you get a workout from this game? I mean, if you're up playing it a lot and you have a whole bunch of songs, is this like a Just Dance kind of thing? Or since you're just waving your arms around, is it a little lighter?
It's lighter, I would say. You still have to strike poses, which, I mean, I guess you move your whole body. But generally, it's just your arms. I guess you kind of get into the rhythm of it. You're probably shaking your hips a little bit, right, with the music. But you don't really need to move your legs. So it's probably up to you how into it you want to get. If you're really into it, you probably could jump around and have some fun with it. Your arms will get a workout. Yeah. So
it'll be like Homer when he took up arm wrestling. You'll have beefy arms. you'll keep your gut, but you'll have beefy arms.
Yeah. Does he say, like, now it's Lefty's turn? And then he never gets
to do that. That's right. He just has one dumbbell.
Yeah. He gets really pumped on the one side, and then he hustles people. Arm wrestling tournaments. Anyway.
I can see Kirk rolling his eyes. Not really. We don't have video on, but.
Yeah.
I can feel it.
We can feel it through the airwaves. Okay. Those two and their Simpsons references, I'll tell you. The other game that I've been playing, well, a few other games, and you know, tell me if you guys have any input into these, because I've got a few this week. Because you know, Kirk, I know you've been busy with the Konami write-ups and stuff. But I mentioned Vampire Survivors, and again, I don't want to spend too much time on a game I've already talked about, but I'm really enjoying this game, and I wanted to give an update because last week, two things. Last week I said I didn't know if you could play handheld mode without the touchscreen, and you can. You can play with the controls in handheld mode, so that's really good. The other thing I wanted to say is that it has multiplayer, which I didn't realize when I started playing it last week. And so I've been playing with my kids quite a bit. It's so fun. Like, I don't know why. This is Vampire Survivors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's, I guess it's a bullet hell. I don't know what you describe it as. It's hordes of enemies are coming towards you continuously, and the aim is to survive as long as possible and kill as many as possible and collect as much, I guess, coins and gems as possible. And what I love about this game that I also didn't mention last week is that you, so I was thinking, I played it a couple of times before the show last week, and then I thought, I don't know how I'm going to keep playing, because I got to a point where it was just too hard. Like, there's just too many enemies. They take too long to kill. I don't know how I'm going to get past this point. But the coins you collect go towards power-ups that you can purchase in the menu of the game, and they add to your strengths or whatever, your health, your defense, and make you a more powerful character by, like, from the outset. And this is a power-up you keep, so you can use it every time, basically. And you can also get a refund on it if you decide you don't want to use it anymore and you want to swap it for something else. Basically, there's a lot of options in there, which I really, really enjoy. There's a lot of different ways to play. And when you add in a couple of other people and you're there trying to survive as long as possible together, like, you're working together, it's, I don't know, it just works really well. I really like it. And we've got, I think last week I was saying a game lasts about 10 minutes. We've got to 20 minutes. So the three of us, me, myself and my two kids, we've lasted 20 minutes in this round. And it was just so much fun. You know, all these different enemies, they change. So there are kind of waves. I said there weren't really waves, like Rotato has waves. They're not timed waves. It's just you start off with a whole lot of bats, and then there's a whole lot of skeletal sword-wielding enemies. Then there's, like, ghosts. Then there's, like, bigger bats. Then there's Medusa kind of things. There's zombies and spirits and all these different enemies. And they just swarm, and it's hectic but fun. So yeah, I recommend it for sure. But my next review game that I'm playing, apart from Mr. Run and Jump, is something called Tuhu. And I was hoping you guys might have heard of this, because I didn't realize. So this is Tuhu. And am I saying this correctly? Tuhu? Touhou.
Sounds right.
I looked at it as Tao Hao, but Tao-hau. I could be completely wrong.
It's probably a Japanese word, right? And you probably know a bit more Japanese than I do. So maybe it's Tao Hao? I don't know. Could be Tao Hao. I think
it's Touhou.
Let's. I'm going to go with Tao Hao, because I'm going to just default to Kirk. But Yes, thank you. Tao Hao New World. And I was trying to work out how this fits into this Tao Hao project that's been going on since the mid-90s, which is like another bullet hell kind of series of games, the Tao Hao series, I suppose. And this isn't part of that series. It isn't. It's a fan-made game based on that series. So it's the same characters and setting, but this is an action RPG with bullet hell elements, I suppose. Like, you know, you go through it. First of all, it's really fun. It's really pretty to look at. It's a top-down kind of RPG style of action, and you're kind of a mage or some sort of magician.
Is this another bullet hell?
Yeah. Kind of. It's more like an RPG, an action RPG with bullet hell elements. So you walk through different worlds, you collect different things. There are enemies to fight, obviously, and that's where the bullet hell comes in. They kind of, like bosses, I guess, in particular, fire things at you that feel a bit bullet hell-ish. I wouldn't say it's a true bullet hell, but definitely has elements in it. And
more like bullet heck.
Yes. Yes, exactly. But for a bit of history, as far as I know, and correct me, Kirk or Trev, if you know more about this, but the Tao Hao Project is a one-man developer, Junya Ota, who's been developing these bullet hell shoot-em-ups since the mid-90s. I think he's got 19 games under his belt and 6 spin-offs that have been self-published, I believe. And this is, like I said, a fan-made title based on that series. So it's really interesting from that perspective. And the team, whoever has made Tao Hao New World, has done a really good job. It's very engaging. It's very fun. There's lots of characters who interact with each other. And the action is really, really spot on. And it's not, from so far at least, it's not too difficult, as in, you have different buttons that do different things, like the special powers you can use. They kind of take time to recharge, so you can choose which weapons to use based on who you're fighting. You can also, there's like, because you're a magician, I suppose, you can heal yourself. So it makes it a lot easier in that you don't really die. Not easily, anyway. You can sort of give yourself, I think, 25% of your health back when you use this spell. of course, if you then hit and it takes off more than the 25% that you've given back, then you're going to obviously die. But yeah, it's not meant to be a difficult game, I don't think, at least not in my early stages that I've been playing. But yeah, I just really, really enjoy the graphical element of it. It looks really, really nice. And I do like a bullet hell and I do like an RPG. So the combination is quite fun. So I think it's going to get a good review from me when I finish it and write it up.
Nice.
Yeah.
According to Chat AI, it's mm-hmm. toe, like toe on your foot. Mm-hmm. And then the hoe is dragged out a little bit longer. So you say the toe quick. Toho. Like that, toe-ho. I guess.
Toho.
Assuming okay. this is right, I might be triggering Skynet here, but.
Yeah, actually, I found a Wikipedia entry, and according to what I'm seeing, both of the O's are held out. So it'd be like Toho, as opposed to like Toho, the production company.
Okay.
And I know a little bit about this because back in 2020, I reviewed a Toho. Now that I know how to say it, I'm going to say it a lot. I'm very proud.
Yeah. Yes.
I reviewed one of the games from the series, except it wasn't a bullet hell. It was an offshoot, and it was like a bubble matching game.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yes. It was called Toho Spell Bubble.
I didn't even realize that was the same like franchise.
Yep. Huh. I gave that one a 7.5. It was a little too expensive, I felt, for the game, but the gameplay was great. Mm-hmm. It was colorful and lively, and it was a lot of fun.
Nice. That must be one of the six spin-offs from Junya, I'd say. If he's done 19 games and six spin-offs, that would be one of them. Yeah.
That's a lot of content.
Yeah, a lot of content over, what, like almost 30-year period. That's pretty impressive. And he... and you're probably in the same article that I saw. I think he's written them. I think he developed them. Like, it's all him. It must be some sort of passion project for him, I suppose. Yeah. He's done the graphics, the writing, and the music as well. So, yeah. Well,
maybe pretty one cool. day we'll get a master collection of Toho yes. project games.
Volume 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a warning about content to set us off.
Yeah. Yeah. So very much enjoying that one. Look for more of you soon. And how are we going for time? We're doing all right here. I wanted to also mention Mario Kart Tour, which is a mobile version of Mario Kart that I dip in and out of. And lately have been a little bit, I don't want to say obsessed, but I've been, I don't even want to say addicted. Let's just say regular. I've been regular with it. Like...
I don't know if every that day. Sounds better.
Yeah, maybe not. Well, how would you put it then? It's just I've been checking in every day and doing my races. There's a daily race you do to get to.
You don't want to know how I put it, Gemma. I mean, it's a mobile game, so I'd probably put it in.
Yes. Well, I feel like it's good for me. I'm getting ahead of the game a little bit because... You know, we have the DLC, and there's only one more round of DLC, but there's been DLC for Mario Kart 8, and we've got one more to go. And Mario Kart Tour has just released a new track, which is set in Spain. So we know Mario Kart Tour has these real world settings from time to time, from Los Angeles to Sydney. There's Bangkok. There's a whole very wide range of them now. And Spain is the latest one that's just been added. And I do wonder if it'll make its way to the Switch, to Mario Kart 8. Deluxe when the last round of DLC hits us. And it's a really fun little track. And the thing that stands out is when you're going through the city, there's a point where you go through a soccer field and there's, are they Goombas? I think they're Goombas in those boots from Mario 3. What do they call those boots? I can't remember what they're called. You know, the ones I mean, they're the green boots that the Goombas sit in and they jump around.
I think now they just call it the Goomba shoe, but back in the day it was like, Karibo shoe or
yeah, it had a Japanese like name, I think. It had some name. Yeah. So they're back. They're giant boots with giant goobers. Anyway. But this big giant soccer balls kind of around, you have to dodge them. But you actually can drive into them and you get points for hitting them. So
Karibo shoe is what it was called.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So it's a fun track. I really like what they do in Mario Kart Tour. Every, I think, 2 weeks, they have a new kind of tournament that you can play through, and they add a new set of four trucks, I think, every day for a bunch of days during that 2 week period. So you don't have to, because if you join at the end of the 2 week period, there's like all these open trucks and it's a little overwhelming. But if you're doing it constantly, every day they unlock a new set of four, so you can kind of do it every day if you want to. You earn stars, you earn prizes, you can unlock characters and carts and gliders and stuff like that. It's just, it's a fun little thing to do for me. I'm a big Mario Kart fan, and like I said, I feel like I'm just getting ahead of the game by preparing myself for what's next in the DLC. So yeah,
you
just
gave me an idea, Gemma.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, how are we on time? But anyway, I'll just say it quick. I think it would be fun for a podcast if we looked at the carts that are left, and if we picked like which carts we'd like to see in the last wave, carts that haven't been tracks that haven't been re-released yet. I think that could be a fun little offshoot of the podcast,
or like for sure. Part of a podcast. That's a really good idea, because you know we've got how many years worth of Mario Kart history to draw upon. What's not in Mario Kart 8 yet? What's not there? And what would we like to see there?
There's still a fair amount. It seems like what could possibly be left, but there's actually, you know, still a decent number. And I think it'd be fun to speculate. Don't cheat. Don't look at any data mining or anything like that.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I do like that idea. I'm very happy to consider my tracks that I'd like to see. There can't be many Wii tracks left, though, right? There's probably some GameCube ones, maybe some of the Game Boy. What was it? The Game Boy Advance, was it?
Super Circuit, yeah.
Super Circuit, yeah. There's probably some from there. Yeah, that's a good question. Well, if you look at what you want, I'll look at what I want, and we'll come back on it.
The hardest thing will be narrowing them down. Otherwise, I'll just be listing a couple dozen tracks.
Yes. Well, I wanted Daisy Cruiser, and I got that. That was definitely one I was looking out for. So, yeah, that came last time. I wanted Coconut Mall, but we have that now as well. Yeah. You know what I do want, just off the top of my head? Some more Bowser's Castle. That's missing for me. There's not a lot of Bowser's Castle tracks.
You're right. I feel like there's not as many of them compared to...
I loved those, like the one on the Super Nintendo. I loved, I used to love that one because I would actually be able to overtake people in that track. Like in Super Mario Kart, the original title, I found nothing more satisfying than overtaking people, as in you're not just winning, but you're then overtaking the eighth person and the seventh person.
You're lapping them.
Like, yeah, you're lapping them. That's it. You catch up to them and you overlap them. I found that so satisfying. And I remember, I think it was just Bowser's Castle 1 or whatever it was called. I think that was one I found somewhat easy to catch up to at least the eighth person and overtake them. I love that. I just loved it. You can't really do that now on the Switch, I don't think. It's the AI is too good. They're not that slow, you know.
You got to go on 50cc maybe.
Yeah, maybe. They were so predictable. Like I knew where to leave a banana peel, because I know that's where they're going to drive, right? So I'd slow them down. Memories. Yeah. So, yes. Well, before we close off, did you want to give us an update on the new issue of the magazine? We just had a meeting about that during the week, didn't we, Trev?
We did. And I'm excited. I'm doing a cover story, which I've actually, this is only my second cover story in like a decade with Pure Nintendo, so go figure. That's weird, but it's going to be Super Mario Brothers Wonder, which we were talking about earlier when we were discussing Charles Martinet. And you know, it's interesting because, you know, it got announced a couple months ago, it will be out a couple months from now, and we don't know a whole lot, so I find myself really dissecting the trailer and every press shot, and I feel like one of those like YouTubers, like, oh, here's 10 things you missed. And then you watch the video and it's like, what is this, you know, nonsense? So it's a challenge to make a compelling cover story, but I'm hard at work on it.
Yeah.
And you were talking about Daisy Cruiser. I think that's your character, Gemma.
Yes, I am doing the character profile as I do each issue, and this month will be Daisy, so it's a bit of a Mario theme. We've never done Daisy before, and I do love Daisy. She's my go-to for Mario Kart, Mario Party, that sort of thing, and probably Super Mario Brothers Wonder, because she will be playable. So that will be fun. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So, for the first
lots time. Of good stuff. Kirk's hands-on stuff from the Konami event is going to be immortalized in print, which is always exciting. And
yeah,
I think we're talking about speculations on the Switch Pro or Switch 2 or whatever the next hardware is going to be. So
yes, yep,
we've been writing that in our heads for years, so
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, there's lots to look forward to, for sure. Yeah, it's always fun. And, you know, it's a little work pulling it all together, but it's really fun because it's just different to, you know, it's different to the podcast, it's different to reviewing and doing stuff for the website. And yeah, like you said, immortalizing it in print, it's kind of special. I like it. I love it. Yeah, definitely look forward to that. So yeah, that'll be out. We're aiming, I think, end of September, early October kind of thing. So we'll give you guys another update as we get closer to that time. But yes, we're definitely working hard on it right now. And yeah, something special. And especially with Mario Wonder, it'll be good timing because that's out in October. And I'm so excited about that game. So,
yeah, it'll be a big one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Did you, either of you, have any final thoughts or closing comments before we sign off?
I don't think so. Although I will say one of the games that I'm reviewing right now,
yeah,
I thought you'd get a kick out of this. We're talking about collections and what constitutes a collection. I previously reviewed a game called Taito Milestones, which was 10 games from Taito's back catalog. And I'm now taking on Taito Milestones 2, which is coming out later this month. And I'm wondering how easily we're allowed to apply the term milestones to games.
yeah.
Because I have never heard of any of these games.
Oh, not one. Right.
So it's not to say they aren't good. But, oh, you know what? They're Darius. Darius 2 is in here. And, well, you guys may not even remember. Do you remember a game show? Maybe in the 80s called Starcade?
No.
It was on cable. Well, I believe they used to play Darius in that. That was a game that would come up for the contestants to play, and I never saw it in an arcade, or at least never played it. But I just thought it was comical that they're calling this collection Taito Milestones 2 when I'm not really sure they're milestones at this point, so much as obscure games that you may remember from the back of the arcade. But as such, since I haven't played them, I am really looking forward to digging into this.
And was the first collection of milestones, did that have games in it that you recognized?
Yes. Yes. Okay. That had, boy, what was on it? Kix was on it, and I loved that game. Wild Western was on it, and I love that. Was it Elevator Action or a Crazy Climber? Was a game my brother Matt loved it. He swore by this game, and I just wasn't good at it. So I didn't like it as much as he did. That was Elevator Action. Yes. And then there were some other games that I hadn't played before, but liked a lot. So I'm hoping to find more of that here in Taito Milestones too.
Mm-hmm. Is it Taito or is it Taito?
Oh, Taito. Here we go again.
It's like, I was gonna say.
It's Toto.
Yeah, we'll never know. You can check your AI bot again, Trip. It sounds like the milestones were all captured in the first collection, and the second one is more like B-sides, right?
Yeah. So I guess that's the danger of calling your collection milestones, because if you're going to release another one, you either got to lose the branding or just be a little optimistic about how well-remembered these games are.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Well, I look forward to hearing more about that when you're done. Thank you very much, and thank you, thank you both for joining me this week and talking all things Nintendo. Thank you, listeners, for joining us, and as I said earlier, please leave us a review on one of the podcasting platforms or like and subscribe on YouTube, and if you leave us a question on YouTube, we will attempt to answer it in the next episode. So, love to hear your thoughts. And if you do want to get on board with the magazine that we're currently working on, you can head on over to patreon.com/purenintendo and get on board for the next issue, which, as I said, will be out late September, early October. And until next week, thank you and game on, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.